Welcome to the Barth Calderon Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hi, everybody. This is Paul Hitchcock with the asset protection, estate planning, business planning firm, Barth Calderon. Welcome to Wealth Protector TV. Really excited to have top attorney at Barth Calderon and my colleague, Hannah Yang, on the show. Welcome, Hannah.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being here. And I want to jump into this, Hannah, because this is a really important planning tool that you're going to talk about. It's the special needs trust. And this is sort of an intro for people who might not know what this is. We're not going to get into the nitty gritty and the detail and go down there. That's for the one-on-ones with you, which I'll mention everybody is if you have questions as you see this video and you want to get one-on-one with Hannah around this video, wherever you're watching this, because we stream it everywhere, is going to be the way to contact Hannah. So Hannah, let's jump into this. What is a special needs trust and who needs it?
Yeah, that's a really great question. First off, I just want to just say that for all the special needs parents that are out there, I'm right there with you because I actually have a child with special needs. And so this topic is very close to my heart. And so before I get into special needs, because I think it's like a journey being a special needs parent. And, you know, along the journey is when you have to start thinking about a special needs trust. It kind of sounds like a big foreign concept, but
right.
You know, usually in the early years of raising a child with special needs, like you're just trying to get by and you're trying to figure out what the child's diagnosis is. And so you're in there with doctors, specialists, therapists. You're trying to get the child treatment and really get them through infancy and early development. So you might not be dealing with financial planning at this point. You might just be trying to pay the bills, work with insurance companies, right?
Great point. Yeah.
And then typically as the school years hit, parents are now trying to figure out, okay, how do I get them through school? Like what's the best education for them? So They might start having to work with school systems to get their child on like an individualized family service plan or an individualized education plan or a 504, all these different things to figure out what accommodations to make for their child.
Hannah, is every school different in how they handle that, or is there a uniformity amongst the schools?
So for public schools, yeah, they all use the IFSP before age three. And then after that, you've got the IEP, the Individualized Education Plan, which is a little bit more tailored. And then the 504, which is, it's basically like an IEP, but not as stringent. But you are basically providing the school with some guidelines and then and really trying to marshal the resources of, you know, the tech dollars, right? Yeah, yeah, the therapists. But then typically as the children start getting older, and sometimes parents might think about this earlier too, if they're already receiving government benefits, but as the children are getting older and then now the parents are thinking about, okay, how is this child of mine going to financially provide for himself or herself? That's when they start thinking about special needs trust. But it's never too early to plan, right? Because we want parents to be prepared with this tool. So that's kind of where special needs trust comes in. And yep. So, you know, with like revocable living trust, the primary purpose is, there's many purposes, but I would say like a key purpose would be to avoid probate. But with special needs trust, one of the primary purposes there is to make sure that the individuals with disabilities or special needs child will continue to receive the type of government benefits that they're entitled to, right? That's tied to their disability, but still can receive income to supplement those benefits and get some, you know, a decent quality of life without getting disqualified from those government benefits.
Yeah, and Hannah, quick question is that, you know, when people talk about trusts, most people have heard about, oh, the estate planning, the revocable living trust. This is not that. And there's many different types of trusts. Mm-hmm. So this is outside of what most people might be thinking about of what a trust is.
Right. Yes, it is. It's a little bit different. So yeah, your standard revocable living trust, you know, unless you specify that you want some kind of like standby provisions for special needs, just in case something were to happen to your child, most of them are not going to have, you know, provisions for special needs.
Right.
So
right.
It is separate. So in some cases, parents might think like, I don't want to do this, right? Like these government benefits, they're not, you know, they're not significant. I have enough to provide for my child.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you've been a special needs parent, you understand that these costs accumulate over time and
yeah.
they add up quite significantly. So all the, you know, whatever help that your child can receive and whatever you can, you know, do to supplement that is going to be critical. So yeah, they're different. And so they are different from revocable living trusts. I'll kind of talk about how they're
yeah.
also kind of related too. Real quick, the type of government benefits we're trying to preserve here, typically the two would be SSI. So you've got supplemental security income,
mm-hmm.
Which would be like a modest monthly cash grant for like food and shelter. It might just be a couple hundred dollars, but think about that cumulatively, right? Over time.
Correct. Yeah. Adds up.
The life of your child. Right. And then you've got Medicaid, which can serve as their primary medical coverage. Again, think about those costs over time.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, in some cases, you know, parents might also want their children to be considered for Section 8 housing, which is a federal program that provides subsidized housing.
Right.
So really quick. So that, the main types of special needs trusts, there's two main types. And the first one would be first party special needs trusts. And then the second is third party special needs trusts. There's another type called pooled trusts that are established and managed by nonprofits, but I'm not going to talk about those today mm-hmm. because it might get a little bit confusing. But so the key thing about first party special needs trusts is that it's a trust set up with the funds that belong to the individual with disabilities, your special needs child, right? So,
okay.
So your classic example of those types of funds would be like maybe an unexpected inheritance.
Oh, okay.
That the person received, or maybe the individual wasn't even born with disabilities, but later in life,
oh.
got into a car accident and then received a personal injury settlement.
Interesting. Got it.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so these have to be set up for individuals, you know, before the age of 65. And you could a new law was passed a couple of years ago where you can even, if you're a mentally competent adult, you can even set one up for yourself if,
okay.
if you are that individual with disabilities.
Okay.
But because the funds are in the name of the person with the disability, the key thing about these trusts is that once that individual dies, the funds in that trust are subject to payback to the state, right? For the government benefits that were received.
Oh, really? That's, okay.
Yes. So contrasting that with third-party special needs trusts, these are funds that are set up with funds that don't belong to the individual.
So like a parent giving the child
right.
money to,
right.
you know, yeah, yeah.
Right, so parents, grandparents, siblings, right?
Right.
And so because they're not in the name of the individual with disabilities, once the individual with disabilities dies, the remaining funds are not subject to payback to the state.
Okay.
So they can actually go to other remainder beneficiaries like family members or charity.
Okay.
And I think you had kind of mentioned how this is separate from a revocable living trust. So yeah, so there's actually two different ways we can set up a third party special needs trust. And one is testamentary, where we build it in to a revocable living trust. So it's not really set up or funded until, let's say, the settlor, the creator of the trust, you know, so like the parent. Once they die and their revocable living trust has to be administered, that's when the testamentary one would kind of spring into existence, right? Or would be formed, and it won't be funded until the death of the creator of that trust.
Got it. So then with that idea, the way I see that is while the parents are alive, they're caring for the child, maybe funding the trust and so forth. But It's when the parents pass away, the trust kicks in,
right?
And you know, the child's not on their own. They've got resources there for food, housing, take care of them. Is that, exactly. Is that a fair way to put it? Yeah.
Contrasting that with another type of third party special needs trust. Again, it's not the funds that belong to the individual with disability. Again, it would most likely be like the parents or grandparents, but this would be a standalone third party special needs trust. So that's established independently, right?
Right.
Separate from a revocable living trust. And so you, the settlor, the grantor, whoever wants to create that trust can create that even and fund it while he or she is living. And you can actually, the great thing about these are that it's not limited to the funds of that settlor or grantor of that trust, but any other people can contribute to it as well.
Got it. So Hannah, the process here, so at some level, I mean, parents can set up a special needs trust for their kids at any age where they feel it's required from the day, you know, from the day they're born on through that. And then what is that process? They sit down with you and you have a discussion with them. I mean, how does that look initially when they're meeting with you?
Yeah, I think it's very specific to their situation and what their goals are. And a lot of it is going to be tied to whether the child himself or herself is receiving, what kind of government benefits they are receiving, right? And so if there are government benefits in play, we'll have to have a discussion about, you know, how we can keep those asset limits in place. But if it's too early for them to decide and the parents just want to have some mechanism in place, you know, most likely it's going to be a discussion about just setting an estate plan that has these testamentary provisions. So I would say it's so highly specific and dependent on the parents' goals for the child, you know, how much they want to spend, who they want to appoint as a trustee, you know, it's really a really broad financial discussion that also, you know, the parents are going to have to think about, and I haven't talked about this in this talk, but ABLE accounts, which is another form of providing for your children outside of trust for your special needs children. It's just such a broad discussion and it's so unique to the individual.
It's not a one size fits all at all for this situation. Right. Yeah. And I know, Hannah, you shared before, been very open about your own situation dealing with your child. And I know you bring a lot of passion to this. I can't imagine any other attorney that's better suited to deal with parents who have this situation than you, because your heart and soul is in it.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, it is. It is definitely. It is a topic that's close to my heart. And, you know, I think, like, the one thing I can take away from having a child with special needs are that every special need is so different. Like, even within a particular subcategory, you think you have so much in common and then you realize how many differences there are. So it really is a very personalized, unique discussion for each child. And so, but I think that's what makes it, you know, fun and exciting and creative, right? Very tailored for the child and for the family. So,
yep. Love it. Great information, Hannah. Excellent as always. And I want to say to everybody, wherever you're watching this, because as I said, we live stream this everywhere. Hannah's information and how to get one-on-one with her is around this video, wherever you're watching, up here, maybe down here, or maybe over here. But please take us up on it. One-on-one complimentary assessment with Hannah. I can explore your own situation. She'll give you her observations, recommendations, sort of your blueprint on what you can do. So thanks, everybody. Thanks, Hannah. We'll have you back here again soon.
Thank you, Paul.
Sure.